Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You're listening to Giants Croncast, a podcast chronicling the San Francisco Giants. Featuring Brian Murphy and Doug Brazoni. Part of FFSN, Fans First Sports Network.
Yeah, the Giants went, 5-1 this week? That's weird. What does that even mean? Oh, we already did this intro. Sorry, everyone. but yeah, the Giants had a great week, Doug. How are you feeling about that?
I feel good about it and also a little confused. Like, what do I do with myself? What do I do with my brand where I'm all negative about them? And I, you know, they go 5-1. You can't complain about that. It's tough for us. I wish the Giants would consider us when they're playing their games.
Don't worry, Doug. They're still 22-24, so there's still
okay.
Plenty of reason to be negative. Yes. But they have risen to third place in the division. They're ahead of the Padres and now ahead of the Rockies by 3.5 games. Remember, they were only a half a game ahead heading into the Phillies and Marlins series this week. My big thing from this week so far, and you didn't ask, but I'm telling you anyway, is that I can no longer bridge the delay in the MLB at bat. So when I am washing dishes and trying to keep track of the game, which I used to do when I had an iPad I would just put the iPad, you know, in front of me, but I don't have one anymore. And I don't want to put the phone there. It's too small. So I've been listening to the radio and it's like 2 minutes behind. It's like a preposterous amount of time behind the actual broadcast. I don't know what's wrong with the app. So I just switched to the Spanish broadcast. I know pelota. I know how to count to maybe like 30. So, like they say the names, I can kind of get an idea of what's going on there. I hope I'm making my Spanish teachers, Senora Huerta and Senora Meldy, proud. Doug, I got to tell you a quick aside about my Spanish teacher from high school. I don't know if he's still with us. I'm sure he's not listening, so I feel okay telling this story. But the story was, you know, did you ever have that high school teacher where there was like some myth or story surrounding them? Maybe before they became a teacher, people knew stuff about them or something they did as a teacher, like just a thing that carried around with them that got passed along. Did you have one of those?
Yes. Yes. He actually wasn't my teacher, but there was a teacher like that who, fun fact, ended up being fired for abusing students.
Ah. Nothing. Was that the story then?
There were kind of rumors when I was there. He was also the football coach for a while. And I was like, okay. And then I forgot about it. And then just last year, the year before, a student who was in my year sued him for being super creepy and sued the district and stuff. And it was a whole big, there was a big story about it. And I was like, okay, I kind of remember her. That's sad. That also makes the really creepy, weird photo of them in the yearbook, because we had a yearbook category for students.
Context.
Most likely to date a teacher was one of our yearbook awards.
Oh my.
And there was a photo of the two of them. And so a lot of pieces fell into place.
I was not expecting this segment to go in this direction. I gotta be honest. My story was simply that he was in a band before he was a teacher, and he was scuffling. The band was scuffling, and he quit the band a week before, is how I heard the story. But obviously, years later, I've processed it like a short time before. It's probably more likely this band hit it big or signed a contract or whatever. That's when he left, and the band was Blue Oyster Cult.
Oh,
yes. So that's the story that carried around. It's like, he got out right before it got good for them, and now he's teaching us Spanish. So, but in any case, the broadcasters, Erwin Higueros, Tito Fuentes, I think there's a third guy, and I think I've not yet tuned in when they've reintroduced themselves, but Giants.
I think the third guy is Marvin Bernard, is what they've
said. Okay, it's Marvin Bernard, which Marvin Bernard then sounds different from how I imagined how he ever sounded, or I don't remember how he sounded, and that's fine. But it's a great experience. For one thing, it's contemporaneous with the game. I think it's easy for us to forget that the Giants broadcast team also includes a Spanish crew, that the team does not hide, but you know what I mean? Like, they obviously don't get the same just by audience size, you know, Krug and Kipe and John Miller and Dave Fleming, like they get all the headlines, but the Giants have a great Spanish team. And me with my barely understanding Spanish, but wanting desperately to listen to a baseball game as it's happening, It's been a great experience. So I just had to point that out. It really helped that the Giants did a lot of exciting things this week. We should talk about some of them where I'm holding us back from the headline. Patrick Bailey, the Giants basically just threw Joey Bart in the trash and they said, here's a new prospect, shiny and better. And they called him up. So, I put this in the rundown, Doug, and I'm going to do the British version. The future is now. Future's here.
Ain't it good? Yeah.
Bit of the transition happening here. Yeah. You wouldn't have caught a chance to see Patrick Bailey play yet in Sacramento.
I've been to one Rivercats game this year, and he did not catch. I don't remember if he was on the roster yet or not. But no, he was up and out in like a flash. It was a somewhat surprisingly fast move for him, which, it comes from, you know, Joey Bart has looked better defensively, but he's still kind of struggling on offense. And
generous.
and Patrick Bailey is, you know, supposed to be a defensive wizard, basically, which we've seen. We saw the Logan Webb game where he called a great game. Obviously, the team lost, but if you give up one run, I don't think that's on the pitcher, the catcher. And then, you know, he did a good job yesterday too, when they sealed the win against the Marlins. So, you know, they just kind of looked at Bart like, yeah, maybe you're hurt now. And they just threw him on the IL and to see what Patrick Bailey could do.
Joey, your groin is looking a little strained. No, it isn't. It's looking a little strained. Okay. Yeah, I think he's both stealing strikes and stealing hearts is fair to say. Exactly. About Patrick Bailey. But he comes in, he immediately looks like, oh, this guy is comfortable behind the plate. His home run yesterday, right-handed. He's a switch hitting catcher. If you're just listening to us for Giants News, thank you so much. Switch hitting catcher, hard to come by. He's been switch hitting since he's been 10 years old, 11 years old. And so he is not a great right-handed hitter by all scouting measures, but he did say of that home run, I think that's the best swing I've ever had as a right-hander, which and he almost had a second home run at the in the eighth inning, I think, of yesterday's game as well. Same, I was on a slider, Steve Okert, great time to hit a home run if you're a right-handed batter. Steve Okert floating a slider in there. But offensively, I think it's exactly what you're saying. We're focusing on the defense here, and if he can hit a little bit, if he can have some command of the strike zone, some great swing decisions, I think the Giants are looking for that very minor. We've talked about this so many times already. The Giants are looking for, if it's a 1% improvement, we're going to take it. If that's all we can get, that's what we'll take. But also, I think this is what I was asking about Casey Schmidt the other day. And I'm not going to say it's a desperation, but it definitely seems like, doesn't it seem like they're saying, let's take what is good right now and let's start putting it forward. Let's show people we actually can do some stuff with our player development.
I mean, one problem the Giants have had, and I think we've talked about this, is that there wasn't a lot to get excited about on the field. And so the Giants are like, you know, if we can catch lightning in a bottle, and they already did it with Schmidt, and now they're like, well, let's try it again. And people can get excited about that. People are excited about Bailey and Schmidt. And so it's, and that's it. Like, in that sense, it's good for everyone. You know, obviously the team is winning and it's good for the fans. Are they going to keep up their level of production forever? Yes, I think so. I think Casey Schmidt will hit 400 this year and for the rest of his career. And I think Patrick Bailey he'll homer in half his games. Yeah.
50% of Casey Schmidt's games will continue to be multi-hit games.
Yeah. Yeah, just a total win-win for everyone.
You know who's not enjoying this past couple of weeks, though, Doug, are the children of these players. As we've seen, both the Schmidt baby and the Bailey baby burst into tears as their family got excited for the home runs that their players hit. Okay, so then that brings me into my other thing. I understand it's human nature, and most of us who are listening to podcasts about baseball, reading articles about baseball, or sports junkies, we recognize seeing executives in desperation mode and throwing anything at the wall that sticks. I hope, though, you're acknowledging the individual at the center of that. Farnsworth is an insurance guy, effectively. He is a risk manager. So the idea that he's just willy-nilly thrown out, you know, just doing anything to save his job or look good or whatever, if that's in there, it's not going to outweigh the risk assessment. Like, in other words, I think he's picking the guys he thinks are most likely to do well right now, even if the data doesn't necessarily back up these guys are ready. But I will add the caveat, how would he be doing that? Here's the thing we haven't really thought about or really haven't dug into, because the Giants overall are, there's a lot more negative or have been negatives that outweigh the positives. It's entirely possible the Giants model for competition being based around how the rules were, you know, last year, that it took an adjustment period for this year, right? With the shift and the pitch clock and all that stuff. And I think the pitch clock cuts both ways. And maybe we've even talked about this. You know, the Michael Confortos of the world, the Mitch Hanigers of the world, their success, their heyday was when guys could just step out of the box at any time, where they had time in a lot more time in between pitches to run through the list of what could he throw me in the situation, or I've got to get my energy back up to get ready for this swing or this or that. And so maybe the Giants have taken their, this is just all speculation, but I'm just trying to wonder, why does it feel like it's turning on a dime? And maybe you can correct me, Doug, if you don't agree with that, but it could just be like, oh, Casey Schmidt and Patrick Bailey both defensively work at the major league level already. We can assess that, see that very clearly. And their pattern of play or their style of play is actually fitting pace-wise and skill-wise with what's successful across the league right now, given the new rules.
I mean, it's possible. Like I would say we obviously don't have enough information on Bailey to really assess him offensively. We couldn't know what the long term is going to hold, but just watching Schmidt, which we have, you know, he is ready. He's ready to hit. He's ready with the new rules. And the other thing is, both of these guys have been playing with these rules for a couple of years now in the minors. Like the pitch clock has been around for a while in the minors. So anyone who was a minor leaguer last year, the year before, is ready for it. You know, they're used to it. So, I mean, that could also be the Giants taking the advantage to just throw them in against people, against maybe major league pitchers who are hurrying up a little bit, who don't have that same internal clock. Like Jesus Luzardo perhaps gets to 10 seconds, like, oh, I got to get on the mound. Where, you know, a minor league pitcher, a minor league hitter is like, all right, I'm already at the right spot at 10 seconds before, you know, at 10 seconds since the last pitch or before the next pitch or whatever it is. So I think that's it is possible that they're more ready with the new rules. And so that could be accelerating their timeline a little bit and helping their early success.
I want to point out this thing because you said it about Casey Schmidt, because I saw some chatter at the end of yesterday that Casey Schmidt, he's hitting the ball a lot, but he's not walking. And that's concerning because that's the sign of plate discipline. And then, of course, some fellow old McCovey Chronicles people pointed out, didn't it take Buster Posey a long time before he drew his first walk? And then it's like, oh, yeah, Buster Posey drew his first major league walk in his, let's see, that's eight, in his 15th game. And Casey Schmidt has played fewer than 15 games. He's played 12 games now. So is Casey Schmidt Buster Posey? We already established this. Yes. So I don't think you need to say anything.
I will say the thing about Schmidt is it's pretty easy to be like, oh, you know, he's a lot of his balls are falling for hits. He's not walking. So it's always easy to be down on rookies and to find a reason. But I will say this for him. He is not striking out a whole lot, 16% strikeout rate coming into today. And if you look at the kind of stat cast, his expected WOBA, right? Because, you know, they used WOBA or WOBA as like the one number that sort of defines you. They're best, like, here's one number of whether a guy's good or not.
Yeah.
And so what he's at right now is 417. It's on the scale of on base percentage. 417 is obviously great on base percentage. It's expecting some regression, but it's saying the way he's hit so far, it should be at 377, which is still a very good hitter. So, I mean, yes, he's doing the things you need to do to be successful. No, he's not walking yet. I'm sure there will be some walks that come in time, but he's not striking out a whole lot and he's hitting the ball hard. So I don't think you can really complain about anything he's doing as a hitter.
I really like his plate coverage. That's one thing I like. And obviously his defense, that glove, is incredibly valuable as well. And more importantly, and I think we mentioned this last year, the energy he brings, just being on the field is pretty great. Ryan Walker, I'm just my awkward transition into that. Just looking at the Giants, looking at the guys that they're calling up, the future is now, that kind of idea. Ryan Walker has been the best reliever on the River Cats this year. He's a 27-year-old reliever with the funky delivery. And I admit, I did not see him in spring training. I missed it. I feel bad because it's like I would have jumped on the whole, oh, it's 95-mile-an-hour sinker, 2,500 RPM spin on the slider guys that the Giants love. And this guy, his slider is incredible, but the fact that he's throwing 95, 96 on the hands, it's kind of not fair. So he looks great. Nice call up. Have you seen Walker? Had you seen Walker or have anything you want to add about him?
No, did not. My only story about Walker is when I was at Rivercats Media Day, he was there and I was trying desperately to think of a couple questions for him. And literally all I could come up with is like the Matt Foley or the Chris Farley, like, your stuff is really good. just like staring at him. I was like, I probably shouldn't do that. So I did not talk to Ryan Walker.
We should probably get Roger Munter back on the show here pretty soon. He did have an interview with Patrick Bailey on his podcast, There Are Giants. Go check it out. Also had an interview with Doug. Go check that out as well. It's a really quick one. But yeah, Doug, one concern I have about Patrick Bailey right now, because I feel like it's just too early. I like the glove and who knows about the bat right now. And it's not worth getting all worked up negatively, except for this point. Catching him out of the side of my eye a couple of times this past weekend, I have to say that his face falls somewhere on the AJ Pierzynski spectrum. I'm sorry to bring this up, but there's like a 20% similarity in their faces. And it was a little bumming me out. putting that out there.
You know, I didn't think of it, but he did remind me of someone. And just now that you bring it up, yeah, that is concerning. We're looking into it.
Yes. One thing I know, Patrick Bailey has a mustache, which is it's a dirtbag mustache. I appreciate that. And looking at the images of AJ Pierzynski, someone's going to probably at me immediately. I could not find one where he had a mustache that didn't look embarrassing. So at least in that sense, you know what I mean? He's reclaiming that facial type, Patrick Bailey. So reclaiming, maybe that's the bad transition. Another bad transition. Oh, usually I'm so good at these. No, I'm not. This week, I want to also talk about the Athletic interview that Andrew Baggerly had with Franzaidi last week. And, you know, it was right before Patrick Bailey's call up. I think it was the night before, right? And so it was an incredible conversation because it's like Andrew Baggerly listened directly to me. And when I was like, we know the Giants major league team is what it is, and they're not going anywhere until the player development pipeline starts producing prospects. Why isn't that the only thing they're asked about? And the entire premise of the article that Andrew Baggerly states up front is we know what the team is, so let's focus on the player development pipeline. So, Doug, what was your favorite section? Let's talk about it.
Well, I mean, first off, obviously this means that Baggerly follows you on a secret account, mm-hmm. I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he's...
I think it's just his main account.
He's probably... does he actually follow you?
I think he does what I do for some people I don't want to follow, but whose tweets I sometimes appreciate, where I'll just search their name and I'll just go to their account and maybe I'll go through their timeline. Because when we were all fired from the Covey Chronicles, he did say he gave us a shout out and he mentioned my account, but you know, without tagging me. And so he's aware. So that's all.
he used to follow me, then at some point he unfollowed me.
Yeah,
I'm still
just too much.
Just too much. My tweets were too good for him, we'll say.
No, I get it. I'm a lot. It's fine. Doug, no, I don't get it.
Anyway, so I thought the most interesting part was when they really got into sort of the meat of hitter development, because that's the main question, right? Like, why haven't the Giants developed an outfielder, an all-star outfielder in my lifetime? which is not short at this point.
People don't know this, but Doug's actually 53. So
I am 610 years old. No, I'm not older than Willie Mays, obviously. So what they're talking about sort of the developing hitters. And one of the things that Baggerly kind of was like, so are you moving away from the cookie cutter launch angle, make every hitter do XYZ approach? And Farhan said, he said, you know, we don't really do that. And then he could, you know, there's more words, but he said, I actually addressed a lot of position players while we were in Arizona. And my message to them was, if somebody is advising you to sell out for more power, even at the expense of more swing and miss, you're getting bad advice, because we want at bat quality. We want good swing decisions. We want guys who control the zone, and we want guys who put the ball in play, which is interesting because I didn't know they wanted that. It felt like they were just on like the driveline train of get swing hard, launch angle, hit dingers. And so it's sort of good to see, because one of the things that that I remember at the World Series years is they had a bunch of different kinds of hitters. You know, obviously all of them were anchored by Buster Posey, the like platonic ideal of a baseball player. So, you know, he could do anything, but you had sort of the dinger strikeout guys like Pat Burrell and Michael Morse. You had the fast guy. You had Andres Torres, you had Pagan, you had Blanco. You had sort of the slap hitter, not quite slap hitter, but like the doubles power guy, right? Freddie Sanchez, Marco Scudero, Joe Panic. And you had the wild swingers, the like Hunter Pence and Pablo Sandoval. And that makes it hard to attack a lineup when you have all these different kinds of guys. And I think that's something that they've gotten away from, because Sandoval never really controlled the strike zone, right? He was good because he didn't have to do that, because you could throw him a ball a foot outside and he might slap it down the line for a double. And you'd be like, what the hell? Like, how dare you?
Even showing that you can get to those pitches can change the approach, because you're like, ah, oh, if he can cover that part, I can't throw it there necessarily or get too fine with it. Yeah. Sorry. Keep going. But yeah.
And so, I mean, it's one of those things that I think it's good to see them talking about getting away from a cookie cutter approach, because I think they kind of had that in 2021 and it worked, and they stuck with it last year and it didn't. And I think that's a really strong reaction. And it also probably has to do with the rule changes with that they can't shift the second baseman into short right field anymore, where a lefty can hit like a normal lefty. And so he's not disincentivized from doing that. So I think it's good to see. I think it's more entertaining. And I think we've seen some pretty good results with that over the last couple of weeks.
To me, the most important part of the interview was Baggerly asking this question about diversity, basically saying, you know, was all this sort of constructed, you know, the type of hitter you are kind of talking about only exists in like Juan Soto. And if you could have Juan Soto, you would, but you don't. In fact, you have a bunch of white dudes. Am I rounding it up to basically what he's saying? And he's like, how do you deal with the fact that what you're looking for, what you've gone after, has effectively resulted in a non-diverse roster with very few exceptions? Is that a fair summation? I mean, go read the article if you want more details, everybody. But do I have it basically right?
I mean, kind of. I mean, he was sort of using diversity as a lead-in to. It's a lot more likely that a white player will be the kind of hitter the Giants say they want. And so, you know, he says there in one of his questions, I was careful to phrase that question as being drawn to draft players with the data that demonstrate those skills, because obviously we don't want to believe in and contribute to stereotypes. Juan Soto might be the major league hitter who best represents the offensive profile that you value. He just wasn't able to generate 3 years of college data and a summer on the Cape to demonstrate those skills. So, I mean, it's not so much which is kind of funny.
Yes.
So it's not diversity like for the sake of diversity, but if you're it's not like racial diversity for the sake of diversity, but a diversity in skill types would kind of naturally follow from a diversity of origins for the player.
I think it was an important question. I know some of the commenters below, everyone always has to sound off, but sometimes I do like to sample just in terms of, like, I'm sure this is not an uncommon opinion, that there's some sort of gotcha element to it, or that, and Andrew Baggerly actually in the comments gets into all this and kind of deals with it and acknowledges that it was kind of maybe an inelegant way of asking the question. But I think it's a fair question to ask, that if you're analyzing what players do all the time and you're even evaluating your own internal processes, what are the outcomes generating for you sometimes is worth examining. And it is bizarre that other teams and I would say in the international pool of baseball players, that for some reason the Giants are pulling from a very particular sample more than anything else. I think it was a very fair line of questioning. I don't even think the wording of his specific question was unfair. And I think it's worth asking GMs a lot about this stuff, because at the end of the day, it's their choices that lead to these outcomes. People might want to say it's the, you know, the players have to perform to some degree too, but they also have to look at what are we identifying? What are we coaching? Right. Because also some element of this is, how are we coaching players? How are we getting these players? All that stuff. And if diversity is an important goal, just different skin colors, let's get basic, but we can also talk about different backgrounds, where people come from. If that's important to you at all, and I understand for some people who just watch baseball games, it's about wins and losses. That's it. But I tend to think when you're running an organization, the best ones have a culture. They are building some sort of community in a way where competition is obviously there, but you also have to kind of look at what are the opportunities you're providing, what are your choices leading to for in terms of those opportunities. I don't know, how often do we get to see these data guys pinned down with their own data effectively? And I don't know, I enjoyed it. So, I don't know what if I appre- I don't know if his answer was like it nailed it, but I don't think that Zaidi's not perfect answer is the result of an unfair question, which I think some people who are quick to always defend everything the analytics gurus do. There are a lot of people like that. It's like, if the Rays want to murder a village of people to get one pitcher for two innings, that's fair game. Just deal
as
with
long
it.
As it's cheap. Yeah. As long yes, as they can do right. it cheaply.
Yes. If yeah. it's cheaper to genocide to get 2.5 innings out of a left-handed reliever, that's fair. That's what the Rays have to do. But, you know, so there's those people, and then phrasing a reporter asking a question about an effectively stalled player development system with a tangibly, actively, legitimately mostly white, you know what I mean? Like mostly white body of players. These are all fair questions. So I don't know. I like to see Bay Area media sometimes go at them a little bit, but it wasn't like a go at. It was like a fair question. Someone reminded me online that I must not have read much Chris Haft because he used to go after the Giants all the time or ask them tough questions. And I got to be honest, my recollection of Chris Haft was that was not the case. So I apologize for that.
What I remember of Chris Haft is that he was very much the like MLB.com guy who would just do the company line. So I don't know who's not remembering Chris Haft correctly here.
And I think the question that's being asked, and maybe Chris Haft asks a question like you've had one black player on the team, and maybe he asked that one of those questions, which is a fair question as well. But Baggerly's question was also including, he was speaking to Zaidi and the front office people the way that they demand questions be asked of them. The ones where you get the best answers from these front office people or is when you acknowledge their process that they've told you about and you reflect it back, not shove it in their face. He was saying like, if you have done this and you've arrived at this, do you think that is an equitable or fair or reasonable or desirable outcome? I don't know. I just thought that was a fair question. I liked it. It was great. He also mentioned the pitching was kind of briefly touched on. And I don't know if I liked Zaidi's answer about it. The question was simple. It's pretty basic. Was it a factor that draft prospects could generate any data in 2020 because of the pandemic? With pitchers, you still have measurables like velocity and spin rate. Did you lean into pitching because there might have been just a little more certainty there? I'm not going to read the whole answer. Again, go to The Athletic, sign up, check it out. But the last line or two is, it didn't necessarily inform a strategy like, we don't know enough about these position players, so let's just take pitchers. But maybe at some subtle level, it influenced our strategy. I'm not calling bullshit, Doug. I'm just saying this.
It's bullshit.
When I say it's bullshit, it's like I'm like poker face 100%
right.
Calling bullshit. I'm going to say this is 40% bullshit in the way that when they said, we believe Aaron Judge was negotiating with us in good faith level, like... But there is that, it's the hope part of it of like, well, maybe it wasn't, but they know. So he knew that is what a guy who makes decisions based on data, that's 100% going to be, it's not subtle is what I'm saying. Between last year and the year before with the drafts, there's also the sense like the Giants, not sort of accidentally, it just like in 2021, I think the pandemic had a lot to do with it. And then I do genuinely believe their thing of like, it just kind of worked out that way with 2022, or am I being too forgiving?
No, I mean, that seems right, because at some point you do just need to get bodies. Like, you know, in 2021, they're like, they want to be sure, or as sure as they can be, that they're getting quality guys, right? They don't have data. They're data driven. They can lie about it. Or, you know, 60% lie about it. But that's going to influence them. And it does seem like it's just best player available in 2022, because you don't need to do that 2 years in a row. They've already kind of filled up the pitching coffers in 2021. You don't want them to overflow and then sort of not know what to do with them. They put a lot of work into each of these guys. They really have to go through and like, go through their mechanics and break them down and build them back up and do all that if they really expect them to make the major league roster, because that's what they need out of a major leaguer. You know, they need someone who's at the best version of himself. Doing that with guys who you don't expect to be around, which would be kind of be what it is if you're just taking picture after picture after picture for no reason other than you can. I think that wouldn't make a lot of sense. I think someone would have put that strategy into a spreadsheet and be like, we can't do it, if nothing else. So, yeah, I mean, I do kind of believe him when he said it was all just best player available in 2022.
Doug, what's something you found interesting about the Giants this past week?
Brian, I found it interesting that the bullpen wasn't terrible.
Hmm.
Because the bullpen, and I'm not sure if all of you have paid a lot of attention, has been terrible this year.
Just woof. Woof.
Yeah. Woof. So they come in and I want to just shout out Jacob Junis, who had been pretty bad and had an excellent week. You know, Scott Alexander, shutdown guy. Like, we know about Tyler Rogers. He's been good all year. Duvall was a little shaky, but that's because he was working on his third straight day. You know, there'll be some shakiness there. Taylor Rogers is getting tons of strikeouts. John Brebbia is looking very good. He wants me to take back my prediction that he'll be the one who falls apart this year, and I won't do it. I won't do it, John. You're just going to have to keep proving it to me. So I'm not saying I necessarily trust them all going forward, but for the week, like, you really can't complain about what any of them did other than Sean Manaea, and we've done plenty of complaining about Sean Manaea this year.
One thing I noticed about Brebbia, maybe, is that don't pitch him every day. Give him a couple days in between. That seems to be where he's able to have good, you know, consecutive appearances. Not the reason they have John Brebbia on the roster, I guess, though, right? So,
okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair. Don't brower him. Like, just let him be a normal reliever. Like, maybe you can get away with it with Tyler Rogers because,
yes,
you know, he's such a unique reliever. He doesn't rely on velocity. You know, I think we talked about it last week. We were like, yeah, sinker ballers, they get more movement when they're tired. Just throw them every day. Why not? Who cares? But Brebbia is like a regular reliever. He relies on throwing 95, like, consistently with his fastball. He just needs the rest to make that happen. But he also pitched yesterday, and he's going to pitch today, too. He's going to start today. So that's fun.
Well, one thing I found interesting was that Mitch Haniger might actually be rising from the dead. How interesting does anyone else find that? I don't know. But he had, what, 6 hits this week in 20 plate appearances? So good for him. Because I really think he needed to let people know that he still existed as, like, a person in the world. As nice as Conforto has started to look more and more, you know, the fact that Haniger was not giving them anything for the most part, as much as that home run before they went to Arizona was something to build off of, maybe this week is something for Haniger to start to build off of, you know, before he gets injured.
Between injuries.
That's right.
He'll be able
to
build a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Haniger started to look good. It's been nice to see, considering how rough he was for a while.
Yeah, and, you know, they weren't like big hits. Like, he didn't hit the ball particularly hard, but sometimes that's how you get you start to build confidence. You know, some jam shots or some flares here and there. Like, he was putting good swings on. They weren't like accidental hits entirely. They were just finding spaces. But guess what? Hitting for confidence for a baseball player is, I think it's like 75% of how they're able to do anything. So,
right.
Anything else?
Logan Webb is completely back, and that's nice.
Are we sure about his back?
No, but
He's back, but not his back.
He's healthy. He's back. Yeah. It's weird that they're like, well, you know, we might give him an MRI. We might not. I'm like, just what? That's just, yeah. Play it by ear. See if you need to give him an MRI or something. But he's, you know, he was great against the Marlins on Saturday. It didn't work out for the team, but he got a ton of ground balls, and that's what you want to see. He looked like his old self. I think his ERA is now in the twos, So, yes, 2.91 ERA. So, I mean, he's back to being the guy that he was over the last couple of years, which is great to see. He had a couple, you know, his first few starts were a little bit rough. And then his next couple, he maybe got left in a batter or two too long, which hurt his ERA. But now I feel pretty good. I feel very good about him. And I'm happy that he's back. And I hope his back stays.
I don't think Giants Croncast, we were ever worried about Logan.
No.
So one last thing I'm got to say is interesting. I found it very interesting that how well the Giants have responded to us negging them. You mentioned Jacob Junis. We've talked mess about him. We've talked mess about Scott Alexander. We talked mess about the Giants and their farm system. And boom, bang, bam, bam, all of them just this week. You know, our podcast timed with Grant's statement and all that stuff. Grant wrote an article. Was that last week? Yeah. Heading into the start of the series where the Giants were like in the tank and everyone was like, what's going on with them? They should be a little bit better than this and they're not. And the Giants took that. They read all of it, Doug. They listened to all of it and they're like, yeah, I am slightly better than garbage. I'm going to be better. So I just find it interesting that negging is working with them, at least right now. They'll make the adjustment. Then we'll have to adjust. So we'll figure it out. But that's.
Yeah. If there's one thing I know about Lamont Wade Jr., it's that he listens to tons of Giants podcasts and that he reads nothing but Giant, but articles about the Giants.
Honestly. We like Lamont Wade Jr. He's doing nothing but.
We do, but he's passing it on to everyone.
That's it.
He can read it and like listen to it because I was like, yeah, great year, Lamont. Where, you know, Mitch Haniger's then like, oh, that's going to be pretty rough. And he's like, man, they're being hard on you. And Mitch Haniger's like, what? What?
He's the only one on the team that knows how to grab audio clips on his phone and then put it in the group text. And like none of the other players are young enough to understand how to do any of that. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Hey, Brian, what's something the Giants did this week that you find concerning?
Maybe this will be both of ours, especially since our time is coming up here. Brandon Crawford?
Yeah.
What did the Giants do with Brandon Crawford? I don't know. They ran him out there. It's not looking good for the big fella. But Brandon Crawford, I will say this. His swing decisions don't look terrible. You know, he doesn't look any worse in that regard, but man, he cannot hit the ball. His defense seems fine, and I think it needs to probably be better than fine to overcome the fact that he's hitting like 150 or thereabouts. After Sunday's game, he is down to 161. He has a 542 OPS. He did have a walk along with the strikeout, but another 0-for-3. And I don't know. I'm going to say I'm bullish that he's going to have a nice 2 weeks in him at some point, but I could be wrong and I'm concerned.
It's hard to watch him at the plate. I think he is still good out there on defense, but you need more offensively. And right now, Brandon Crawford isn't providing it. And it's a little bit hard to watch because we've seen him for a while. And, you know, Giants fans are very attached to Brandon Crawford for good reason. And this is, it does feel like the end. So take that, negging.
Lamont Wade Jr. is already on it. He's clipping it.
That's right.
He's sending it. I mean, look.
Look at what these jokers are saying about you.
Who are these guys? Well, listen, Brandon Crawford, I was your age once. And let me tell you. It's sometimes it's okay if things are over. No, but I mean, we all kind of figured heading into this year that this was it regardless, that he could go, you know, go off in a blaze of glory. He could peter out. I mean, I don't think they're going to cut him. Knock on wood. But, you know, it could get bad. There's a version where it gets bad enough that by August he's like, that's it. And maybe like we'll get him in the first weekend of September and then that's it. That's happened in baseball before. But there's just a part of me that's like, I feel like we've all counted Brandon Crawford out every other year of his career. Right. And he's done enough at some point in each of them to make you, oh, okay. Like, even last year, he came off the IL at the end and it was like, oh, Brandon Crawford. Oh, he's back. I think we're still good for one of those spurts. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I hope so. I will say, you mentioned his swing decisions. His swing decisions per Fangraphs have not been good this year. So.
Okay, well then, see, this is why I need the eye test. Who's leading the team in swing decisions? This is why I need the numbers. Okay, yeah. Just his are not good. Got it. All right. Maybe I'll delete that part out, but probably not. Is this O swing and O no swing? Is that where it's bad?
Exactly. So, yeah.
I see. It's, there we go.
He's swinging at like 40% of the pitches that are coming in that are out of the zone. Depending on which one you use on Fangraphs, it's either 39% or 38%.
It's not what you want.
It's not what you want. And then the pitches in the zone, he's swinging at either 74 or 71%, and he's making less contact.
Well, that I do. Okay, that I mean.
But it's not good.
So he's swinging at everything and he's missing everything. There we go. He's Joey Barting it at the plate.
He's actually swinging at less pitches in the zone than he has in any year since 2014.
Okay, so he's a shambles. But my larger point still remains. Plenty of times he's been down for the count and he's been able to get back up.
No, that's true.
And if Rocky Balboa, that movie, has taught me anything, it's that a 60-year-old man could somehow survive a title fight against the champion of the world, heavyweight champion of the world. Well, this case is Major League Baseball, and Brandon Crawford is the 60-year-old man, in case that was unclear. All right, Doug, where can people find your work? We have stopped promoting ourselves.
I am at giantsdoug.substack.com, where I write twice a week about the San Francisco Giants, a baseball club in Major League Baseball.
And we're on Fans First Sports Network. Fans First SN is where you can find them on Twitter, at Fans First SN. And we're having a listener mailbag at the end of the month. I just realized there's going to be a traffic jam between our Bullpen Trust Power Rankings and a mailbag. Maybe it'll be the same episode. I don't know. Send us your questions at GiantsCroncast on Twitter. We've already gotten a couple, which are great. Send us some more. We'll have a mailbag. So thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode. Until then,
go Giants!